This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll zero in on the agency that is asking New York voters to allow it to double the amount of money it can lend to businesses. Last week, the State Board of Regents declined to act on the matter. Now it is headed for a court, and the decision there could change the face of school sports in New York. What's the issue? A high school girl wants to play on the football team. Leslie Brokaw prepared this report.
A year and a half ago, Jacqueline Lance of Yonkers went out for her high school's junior varsity football team. She had played football all her life and wanted to be a kicker for Lincoln High School. The coaches were receptive. She began weightlifting training, but was later told that a New York State regulation prohibited her from trying out for and playing on the team because football is a contact sport and the state prohibits co-ed contact sports teams. She wrote letters to New York's Education Commissioner Gordon Ambach, the New York Board of Regents, and her Assemblyman Nick Spano, who introduced legislation to change the law, which later died in committee. Jacqueline Lance then went to the New York Civil Liberties Union, which couldn't find a lawyer who was willing to take on the case for free. But then Elizabeth Balsley won the same case against the state of New Jersey, and Lance went back to the Civil Liberties Union, who was unable to enlist lawyer Virginia Napland to represent Lance. Ms. Napland says that the month-long legal process to bring the case against the state will probably be wrapped up next week.
Well, I brought suit on October 2nd, which is a Wednesday. I filed the suit in federal court, and I was assigned a judge. I immediately went to that judge's chambers with the motion I had to bring about an immediate hearing to get a temporary restraining order that says, okay, during the year or so it's going to take to settle this case by trial and so forth, you can play in the meantime. That's what you're going for, is a temporary restraining order.
Because the lawyers from the state attorney general's office couldn't get to New York immediately, the hearing was put off until next Monday, October 28th. Naplin says that all sides have agreed that if the judge rules in Lance's favor next week, the decision will not only be a permanent injunction that allows Ms. Lance to play football, but a declaratory judgment on the regulation's overall constitutionality. All girls across the state would then be eligible to try out for any sport that was provided for boys but not for girls. I asked Attorney Naplin what the arguments are that she's presenting for her side.
The first argument you have to present is that irreparable harm will come to your client if he doesn't grant your immediate motion. So there are two ways I did this. First of all, there's a Supreme Court case that says that if you allege deprivation of it, one of your constitutional rights, that's irreparable harm. You don't have to go further. So the judge understood that, and I did allege that she was being denied her constitutional right to equal protection of the law. So he agreed with that argument. But I also stated that the football season was now 1 week old, there were only 7 weeks left, and that there was a requirement that she practice for 4 weeks before she could get into a game. And so that something had to happen within the next 3 weeks if she were going to make it into a game this season.
The state argues that they have a legitimate interest in protecting the safety of girls, and that girls run an inordinate risk of injury if they play with boys. But Naplin says that the state can't treat all girls on the basis of the average girl's risks.
The Supreme Court has already said you can't lump people. You can't say that all handicapped people can't climb ladders and therefore you don't let them be painters. Some handicapped people can climb ladders. Maybe their handicap consists of being blind in one eye. Right? You can't lump people. You have to judge people in this country on their individual traits. And the same for women. You can't say that women cannot try out to be firefighters because the average woman can't carry a 200-pound person down a three-story ladder. Because the average woman can't do it, that doesn't mean that a 200-pound woman can't do it. And therefore, you can't say she can't even attempt it because she's a woman. That's what the firefighter's case was about. Her family and she love football. As she said to me when I interviewed her before I agreed to take the case, she said, I just like to play football. If there were a girls' team, I would play on it. But there's not even a girls' team. I love to kick. I love to play football. And I see the boys out there, and they're having such a good time, and I have to sit on the sideline. She said, I've had season tickets to the Jets ever since I can remember. I earned them with my own money. And all over the one wall of her living room is Jets memorabilia. She's got pennants, and she's got a picture of herself with Mark Gastineau. I mean, it's incredible. They are just a football family. And everyone has said to the parents, well, what do you think about your daughter playing football? And the mother said, I didn't want my son to play, but he wanted to play. So I said, okay. Jacqueline wants to play. I said, okay. That's what she wants to do if she understands the risk of injury.
Virginia Napland is the lawyer representing Jacqueline Lance in her challenge to New York's regulation which prohibits co-ed contact sports teams. I'm Leslie Brokaw.
Last week, we reported on the results of the latest poll by the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion. This week, the man who coordinated that poll, Dr. Lee Merengoff, delves deeper into the numbers and their significance.
In addition to documenting Cuomo's consistently high ratings as governor of New York, this survey also revealed that the New York electorate is overwhelmingly opposed to President Reagan's recent tax reform initiative to eliminate the deduction for state and local taxes. Opposition to this proposal is across the state and reflects disapproval on the part of Democrats, independents, and surprisingly Republican voters as well. Even among those Republicans who think that Ronald Reagan is doing an excellent job as president, a plurality believe that the tax reform idea is wrong. Mario Cuomo is indirectly the beneficiary of this view. Cuomo has adopted a strong posture in opposition to the idea to eliminate the deduction, and his rating on the question of whether voters think he is spending too much attention on national politics and not enough on New York State has gone up. Specifically, 72% of state Republicans oppose the Reagan proposal, and only 19% of state Republicans support the idea. In terms of Cuomo's role in national affairs and state politics, there has been a full 15% swing among state Republicans in Cuomo's favor. Whereas a slim plurality believed in June that Cuomo was spending too much attention to national politics and not enough to New York State, now a majority of Republicans endorse the role Cuomo is playing. Mario Cuomo has again, it seems, found the center of public opinion on an issue that defines his administration. The list of popular causes that Cuomo has heralded grows longer, including the transportation bond issue, the seatbelt law, the raising of the drinking age, and now his opposition to the Reagan tax reform proposal. Up until now, these issues have been largely New York State matters, but Cuomo has thrust himself into the national spotlight on tax reform. Although the public wants a change, it seems that they reject the current Reagan idea and endorse what Cuomo is doing. What this episode will do for Cuomo in the future in national politics is too far in the distance. In terms of New York State politics, it is another weapon in his re-election campaign arsenal with the 1986 gubernatorial election just 1 year away. In the meantime, for the Legislative Gazette, this is Lee Merengoff at the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion in Poughkeepsie.
It's a safe bet that most, maybe 100% of New Yorkers, never heard of the Job Development Authority, or JDA. But on election day, they'll be asked to approve a proposal by the JDA to double the amount of money it can lend to stimulate business. Supporters, including Governor Cuomo, say it's a great idea. Detractors call it welfare for the rich. Ron Moss is the executive director of the Job Development Authority.
Commissioner, there is a proposition on all of our ballots, and if one were to vote in New York State, which I don't, which would allow you to support something called the JDA. What is JDA?
It's the Job Development Authority, and it's a proposal that we have on the ballot. It's an amendment to the Constitution.
What, in fact, would it allow us to do in New York State, and why does the Constitution have to be amended to do that?
Well, because it deals with a bonding authority, the Constitution has to be amended to increase the amount of the limits bonding that JDA is allowed to do. Currently, JDA is allowed to bond up to $300 million, and it has spent almost all of that, or loaned out all of that money, and if it's going to continue to be the economic tool it has been in the past, we need to refund it with an opportunity to raise another $300 million through bonding.
Okay, now, it would seem to me that there's a lot of people out there who are saying, why should we go out and borrow money again? We're indebting our children. These bonds have to be paid off. It's another way to spend money. It's welfare for the rich. What are some of the answers to these things?
Well, first of all, this money doesn't cost the taxpayer a dime. What we do is we sell these bonds to people who can afford to buy them and who want to buy them, in fact, because they are tax-deductible bonds. We take the money and put them into JDA, which is a state-run bank, in effect.
Job Development Authority. Okay, now, just quickly, what does the JDA do?
The JDA lends this money as part of a package. Up to now, JDA has never lent more than 40%, because that was its lending authority and limit, 40% of a deal.
Now, a project. I have a Shartok comes to you or comes to JDA and says, listen, I'm going to employ people, I'm going to bring people to New York State, I'm going to set up a plant, but I don't have the money to do it. So the JDA takes a look at me and says, okay, we find you a reasonable risk, right?
Well, no, there's a preliminary start. First of all, you got to go to a bank, mm-hmm. You've got to go to other sources, and you have to come in and show us that, A, you've already raised the necessary bank money, bank loan, if that's what you want, that you put in the necessary capital, that you're prepared, if necessary, to guarantee the loans, and that you have a financial balance sheet and P&L projection that makes you look like you can do the job.
Well, that sounds perfectly reasonable. But then why do I need the JDA? Why doesn't the bank just give me that money?
Well, the bank has a limit to what they're going to lend you based upon your financial condition. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that limit, they're looking for additional ways for you to find the money. In fact, the banks think JDA is terrific because JDA helps them as well as help the company. Because if the bank says, Mr. Charlock, you're only good for a $400,000 loan and you need $1 million to get your company off the ground, I suggest you do the following. The net result is JDA can get into the act, be part of that process, can give you money at below market rates, and help you get your job started in New York State.
Now, of course, if I were a bank, I would love it too. After all, as you just said, they're essentially supplying me, the bank, with the money to work with to some degree, right? So that it's to the bank manna from heaven.
Yes, it is. But again, remember, we lend against real estate and machinery and equipment only, and we take liens against that equipment as our security. And if we're not satisfied that we have adequate security, we'll also take your guarantee.
But I presume that the JDA is in business to support projects that might not ordinarily would be a little bit more marginal than a bank would support by itself without the JDA assurance, right?
Yes, that may be true. In many of the cases, it is true. It's not necessarily true, though, because the criteria is not always a question of need. It's a question of what will make the company more viable in terms of creating more jobs. And more importantly, let's take the situation where you're already in existence here. And what you find going for you is that the state of Pennsylvania just offered you $1 million to move over to Pennsylvania into an industrial site that they've got picked out for your 350 employees. And then you come to me and say, hey, wait a second, New York, what are you going to do for me?
So rather than trickle-down economics, which is what Reagan talks about, I mean, that seems to me what you're talking about here, too, right? That if you make these loans, that it'll trickle down in terms of benefits to the rest of New York State.
Well, clearly it does. Last year, we made $110 million in taxes
right.
on JDA loans, and JDA loans themselves made a profit of $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a giveaway. This is an organization that's run very tightly, as a bank would be run. We have a lower loss ratio than the other banks because we don't lend to Argentina and Poland,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing very well.
It seems to me that one has to be suspicious here. I'm looking at all kinds of letters to the papers from guys like Ray Schuler, the head of the Business Council, tremendous support. You have a list of supporters, some of whom have real decent economic pedigrees as long as my arm. And I've got to say, hey, wait a second here. These guys aren't in business for their health. They're obviously, this is truly welfare for the rich. We're helping them develop their businesses. What's wrong with that kind of suspicion on my part?
Well, because it's just not true. I mean, let me tell you a story about a recent JDA loan. And this involves economic development people. At the heart of the matter, you've got political leaders in communities where there is adverse economic conditions. You have the Commerce Department's regional people who are down trying to help a little town called Waverly,
mm-hmm.
which is in the western part of New York. It had a plant close that Ingersoll Rand ran. It was in castings. And when this plant closed and the men were out of work for over a year, they finally got themselves together with the help of the local people, with the help of the town, with the help of the economic development people, and they formed an ESOP, which is employee ownership. They hired themselves a good manager, and they wanted to reopen the plant. But these guys wanted to go back to work. They've been out of work for over a year. And they came to JDA with a package that included concessions from the town, concessions from the bank. Everybody wanted to help these guys get back to work, and JDA did too. And that's the kind of story that JDA really represents, is the ability to put people back to work.
And you're saying if you don't have the money, you don't have the tools to do that.
Exactly.
Okay, now, I'm delighted you mentioned Pennsylvania as your test case, because last week on this very program, we had Senator Roy Goodman, who seems to be gearing up for his gubernatorial campaign against Mario Cuomo. And what did he say as his number one critique? That Cuomo was not doing a good job in economic development, and we were letting our business get away because we couldn't offer the same kind of low-cost loans to business and to startup businesses as did Pennsylvania, so he said. So here's your chance to tell us whether or not what he says is true. Is the governor to be faulted on this, A, and B, is this the remedial action that will be needed?
Well, let me say that he's wrong, that we have a whole group of programs in the state of New York that are just as good as Pennsylvania's. Even if Pennsylvania currently can lend more under their JDA than we can, we're going up from 40% to 60% in this new amendment in proposal number one. And that will make us competitive on that particular economic development tool. But economic development tools like JDA, you know, are only part of the mix. You've got to come in with all kinds of other things that make it attractive for a company to stay in New York. And we have done that. Look at General Motors at Tarrytown. We did a splendid job of creating an environment for the General Motors Corporation to invest another $140 million in the paint shop so that we could stay, they could stay, and we could have thousands of jobs remain in Tarrytown. And the governor was in the front of that. And economic development in the state of New York is diverse, exciting, and going on all the time, and JDA is one of the weapons we use to keep our companies here.
Ron, refresh me for a moment. You, of course, have had some real extensive advertising background, right?
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little about the politics of this situation. It seems to me it's fairly dangerous. You can walk down in front of the building we're standing in right now. You can ask the first 100 people who pass who the lieutenant governor of the state of New York is, and no one will know. I mean, because first of all, we don't have one. Second of all, if we had one, they still wouldn't know. So how are you going to explain something like what in hell a JDA bond is to them? I mean, you're talking to a fairly interested group of people on this radio show right now, but for most people who walk into that room, they're never going to know what a JDA is, right?
Well, that's what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks. I've been traveling all over the state, talking to everybody from town to town, from city to city, educating people as to what JDA is all about. This is an educational campaign, and that we have to explain it to people because nobody's against it. The problem is apathy. The problem is lack of knowledge. We have to get the message across, and that's what we're trying to do.
I had a doorman when I used to live on 96th Street named Harry, and Harry used to tell me that he always voted against bond issues. Just voted against them because they were no's. He said, don't let the bums get any more money than they have. Is this the kind of thing you're facing?
Yes, we're facing those kinds of institutional no voters, and we have to turn out a vote of people who understand and are supportive of JDA.
Have you and your deputy, Mr. Morello, gone around and looked for, done any polling to find out whether or not, where people are on this issue?
We have not done any polling. We're, the JDA campaign is being run with very little funds, and we need to use every bit of it for the marketing that we're going to have here in the next 10 days. I don't think on a proposition or a proposal you can get that much effectiveness in polling, but because how you turn out a vote for a proposition or a proposal is very difficult.
Well, how do you do it?
Well, we hope that in every city where there is an election campaign, people will come out to vote. And it is those people who are running for office, where we've gotten bipartisan endorsement for this throughout the state, we hope that in that situation we can generate a large turnout for JDA.
Now, Commissioner, some would say you have taken essentially a good, strong Republican issue here and fed it back to the electorate. Is this a Democratic concept? Is it a Republican concept? You mentioned bipartisanship.
This is a bipartisan concept, as far as I'm concerned. Every Republican leader in the state is in favor of it, and every Democratic leader in the state is in favor of it. There doesn't seem to be any controversy about it at all.
And yet you seem a little worried.
Well, I'm worried about the fact that, as you pointed out, your doorman named Harry votes no on anything because he doesn't know what it's all about. And educating Harry is my job. Can I get his number so I can call him up?
Ron Moss. Well, I'm here with my partner and producer of the Legislative Gazette, Bill Gralty. Bill, what'd you think of that interview?
Well, it sounds, it's kind of in the realm of mom and hot dogs and apple pie in one sense. It sounds, at least the way it's being presented by the Cuomo administration, is something that you just can't possibly be against. But there are certainly some points worth considering in opposition to a doubling of their bonding program.
Yeah, it seems to me, Bill, that one or two of the things that we ought to be looking at here is, number one, if in fact it's all that safe a program, which everybody says it is, then how come they need the $600 million? In other words, if all these risks aren't really risks at all, why aren't the banks taking them? Why are we supplying money, as New Yorkers, as voters, why are we supplying money for the JDA to operate with? Well, there are a couple of things to be considered here, it seems to me. Number one is what we call, and what the governor has derisively called, trickle-down economics. If this ain't trickle-down economics, I don't know what is. In other words, the theory is that if you give money to businesses, that the businesses will employ more people will come off welfare, and there will be a general resurgence of the economy. Well, I'd like somebody to tell me, perhaps in a letter, what the difference is between that and what the president has been espousing in a lot of ways. Second of all, Bill, I think we have to look at something else here, and that is that we heard on this very program last week a fairly vicious attack by Senator Goodman on the economic policies of the Cuomo administration, particularly where it comes to encouraging business. And if this JDA bond isn't an answer to that, I'd like to know what is.
Well, some of the criticisms dealt with other aspects of encouraging business, including percentage rates that are paid on loans and other types of state support. But clearly this is part of the governor's new support of business. And also, it's my understanding, maybe you've heard differently, that one of the aims of this JDA program is to target loans into areas that banks are just more or less, well, they don't like the word redlining, that is deliberately not giving loans in an area like that. For instance, agriculture is one. It's my understanding that the Agriculture and Markets Commissioner is very excited about the JDA because he thinks it will provide more money for agricultural-type businesses, which banks these days are not very, very anxious to support.
Well, two points there, Bill. Number one, of course, redlining in this state is illegal. That's number one.
Right.
However, it still is difficult to get some loans in some of these marginal areas. You can't have it as a policy that you're not going to give any loan in that area, but we know where the greater risks are. And where the greater risks are, of course, is the possibility of default. And therefore, this is something that we have to get a straighter answer on. If, in fact, the administration is telling us all along that there is no major possibility of default, and if there is, it's going to be so marginal that the extra money that they charge on the loans is going to take care of it, then why aren't our bankers acting more responsibly in the first place?
Final question on this point. I'm just kind of curious. You said at the beginning of the interview that perhaps as many as 100% of the people have never heard of the JDA. They just have a few more days before they're being asked to vote on it. Are they gonna know about it between now and then?
Well, they're trying. I got to tell you that I had a doorman when I used to live on 96th Street, and he used to say, on the propositions, I vote against all of them because I don't trust government. The government is always trying to do us in. And you may remember that earlier this week on the Capital Connection, the governor made that very point. He said that a lot of people just vote against things that are sponsored by government, so that there can frequently be a no vote on bonds. And of course, you know, the governor's the guy who goes around talking about how the president of the United States has gotten us into all this trouble by borrowing so much and the national debt is out of sight. Well, we have a $1 billion environmental issue coming up. We've just had Rebuild New York. These are things that have to be repaid by our children. And I got to tell you, for whatever it's worth, that while I really admire the aims of this JDA program, we really do have to be very careful about the amount of bonding we go into in this state.
We have time to quickly turn to one other subject, and that is the rather curious situation that's going on now with the governor's endorsement of a candidate for the U.S. Senate seat now held by the Republican Alphonse D'Amato. And during the Capital Connection program this week, at least in my interpretation of listening to it three or four or five times, it appeared that he absolutely and convincingly came out for Geraldine Ferraro, no matter who enters the race for U.S. Senate.
There's no question about that, Bill, and I think that there are a number of reasons for it. I love this whole situation. First of all, I want to tell you that whose name is surfacing outside of all what we're going to talk about, and that is Hugh Leo Carey is apparently being seen more and more these days, and there's a lot of talk about his running for the United States Senate. That, of course, was the guy who done unto Mario in many different ways in his career, and not all of it all that good. So all of a sudden, we have the governor coming out in support of Geraldine Ferraro, who he said on the Capital Connection many weeks ago, he doubted whether she was going to run in the first place. So now they had a meeting, and she told him all that she was doing in order to prepare for such a Senate race, allegedly, and polls, that kind of thing. I would have liked to have been a fly on that particular wall during that meeting, because I just imagine what went on there. And he comes out, and somewhat, I think, a little bit unhappily, from what I could tell, says, yes, he would support her no matter who the opponent was. Now, of course, he may believe she's not going to run anyway, in which case that's highly symbolic. He continues his support. Why would he have been against her for Senate when he was for her for vice president? There's the whole women's issue and the support for that. And then on a CBS interview that I saw just yesterday, she said that she might be interested in an even higher office. There's only one higher office in the United States Senate in this state, and that, of course, is governor. And wouldn't it be interesting if Mario Cuomo was starting to consider Geraldine Ferraro as his lieutenant governor running mate in case he runs in 1988 for president of the United States?
You have opened up a whole Pandora's box here, in a sense, and one that we'll have to get into in other weeks.
That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government and politics. Bill Gralty edits and produces and talks on this program. Leslie Brokaw is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC Box 13000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.